Feliz. Tak, Vaje Sogo Pas. Tatak. Thereafter. Pravayasa. Elderly. Gopa. Coward man. Toka Ashlesha Sunivrita. Became overjoyed by embracing their sons. Krichchat. With difficulty. Shanai. Gradually. Apagata. Ceased from that embracing and returned to the forest. Tat anusmrita udashava. As they remembered their sons, tears began to roll down from their eyes. Translation and purport by Srila Prabhupada. Thereafter, the elderly coward man, having obtained great feeling from embracing their sons, gradually and with great difficulty and reluctance ceased embracing them and returned to the forest. But as the men remembered their sons, tears began to roll down from their eyes. Purport. In the beginning, the coward men were angry that the cows were being attracted by the calves. But when the men came down from the hill, they themselves were attracted by their sons, and therefore the men embraced them. To embrace one's son and smell his head are symptoms of affection. Text 35. Prajasya Rama Premardir Vikshasya Kancham Anuskanam Muktas Danesh Patyesh Api Ahetu Vidachintayat. Because of an increase of affection, the cows had constant attachment even to those calves that were grown up and had stopped sucking milk from their mothers. When Baladev saw this attachment, he was unable to understand the reason for it, and thus he began to consider as follows. Purport. The cows had younger calves who had started sucking milk from their mothers, and some of the cows had newly given birth. But now, because of love, the cows enthusiastically showed their affection for the older calves, which had left off milking. These calves were grown up, but still the mothers wanted to feed them. Therefore, Balaram was a little surprised, and he wanted to inquire from Krishna about the reason for their behavior. The mothers were actually more anxious to feed the older calves, although the new calves were present, because the older calves were expansions of Krishna. These surprising events were taking place by the manipulation of Yoga Maya. There are two Mayas working under the direction of Krishna: Mahamaya, the energy of the material world, and Yoga Maya, the energy of the spiritual world. These uncommon events were taking place because of the influence of Yoga Maya. From the very day on which Brahma stole the calves and boys, Yogamaya acted in such a way that the residents of Vrindavan, including even Lord Balaram, could not understand how Yogamaya was working and causing such uncommon things to happen. But as Yogamaya gradually acted, Balaram in particular was able to understand what was happening, and therefore he inquired from Krishna. I think text 36 got missed in the schedule, so I'll go ahead and read it. What is this wonderful phenomena? The affection of all the inhabitants of Raja, including me, toward these boys and calves is increasing as never before, just like our affection for Lord Krishna, the supersoul of all living beings, entities. Purport. This increase of affection was not Maya. Rather, because Krishna had expanded himself as everything, and because the whole life of everyone in Vrindavan was meant for Krishna, the cows, because of affection for Krishna, had more affection for the older calves than for the new calves, and the men increased in their affection for their sons. Balaram was astonished to see all the residents of Vrindavan so affectionate toward their own children, exactly as they had been for Krishna. Similarly, the cows had grown affectionate toward their calves as much as toward Krishna. Balaram was surprised to see the acts of Yogamaya. Therefore, he inquired from Krishna, what is happening here? What is this mystery? Om Jnana Timananda Shagyanada Jana Salakaya Chakshu Mitamina Tasma Shri Gurave Namaha Vancha Kalpatru Bhishcha Kripa Sindhu Bhivacha Pati Tanu Pavani Vyo Vaishnav Bhivyo Namo Namaha. So this is a very extraordinary Leela. The Leela of Brahma stealing the cows and the coward boys, and of course Krishna expanding himself as the cows and coward boys, and ultimately bewildering Lord Brahma. So this is often called the Brahma Vimoha Leela, the bewilderment of Lord Brahma. We see in these particular verses the very powerful working of Yoga Maya. And it so much reminded me, starting this month of Kartik and our worship of Lord Damodar, of course, just a few months ago, we read in the Srimad Bhagavatam the pastime of Mother Yashoda and the trying to bind Krishna, and her becoming bewildered also by the power of Yoga Maya. These are two very, very extraordinary pastimes that I think are very much beloved by the devotees, and there are so many lessons within these pastimes that they remind me a little bit of one another. I mean, of course, all of Krishna's pastimes are wonderful, but I think these pastimes of Damodar and this pastime of the Brahma Vimoha Leela are just particularly nice pastimes. And the central theme that is in both of them is this powerful acting of Krishna's internal potency or Yoga Maya, and how that manifests to increase the love of the devotees and to actually help them become closer to Krishna. So there's some discussion in this verse in purport about Yoga Maya, Maha Maya, the relationship between them. What is happening right now is that it is getting near the time of the year that had passed since Brahma's first stealing the cows and the calves and the coward boys. Now during this whole time, of course, all of the residents of Vrindavan are under the spell of Yoga Maya. Krishna has expanded his internal energy so that the mothers, the fathers, and even the cows do not realize that their calves and their sons are missing. In fact, not only do they not realize they're missing, but their affection for those calves and for those boys grew more and more in this very, very amazing way, because Krishna had expanded himself to become the calves and the coward boys. Therefore, they were experiencing that same love and affection for Krishna, that they had towards Krishna for their own children. Now, what was Balaram's position during all of this? Of course, Balaram was not stolen or covered by Lord Brahma. He's obviously much too powerful for Lord Brahma to have any influence on him. And he also was not covered there was no change in him. In other words, as Krishna expanded himself as the coward boys and the calves, there was no such change with Lord Balaram. Balaram is already the first expansion of Krishna. But at the same time, Krishna's internal potency of Yoga Maya is so powerful that even Lord Balaram was under his influence. So Balaram also did not realize what is happening. Now, in these couple of verses here, in the next verse or two, this awakening of Lord Balaram to what is really going on has just begun. So even though Lord Balaram would usually never be subject to Yoga Maya, being in the powerful position is not different than Krishna, in this particular case, Krishna did cover Balaram. And it's explained one of the reasons is that he didn't want Balaram to miss his friends. He didn't want him to be in the anxiety of the cows and the calves and the friends being stolen, so that he could carry on with the same relationship that he always had. So Krishna didn't want to disturb him. Additionally, Balaram also experienced this increased affection for the coward boys and for the calves. Just as the parents were experiencing this increased love and affection, this prema that they never had really felt. I mean, they always, of course, loved their sons and the calves very, very much, but it increased so much. In the same way, Balaram also experienced the same increase in loving relationship with the calves and the boys. So for all these reasons, Krishna had put Balaram under the spell of Yoga Maya as well. Now it's described that Balaram's illusion, you could say, or his covering by Yoga Maya is beginning to lift. And Balaram is wondering what is actually happening here. Vishwanath explains that Balaram's illusion or covering of Yoga Maya was lifted in three phases. First of all, he realizes this extraordinary relationship between the residents of Vrindavan and the calves and the boys. He's seen this as something very extraordinary. In fact, in this verse, he was just witnessing this. Why is it that they have such strong relationship and that even he is feeling this strong relationship with him? So he's seen this as something different. There's something unusual going on. So that's the first phase. The second phase, Balaram is beginning to think something is at work here. This is not ordinary. There is some mystic power or some force, greater force that is at work. And so he's starting to, just in this last verse, he's beginning to say that. He says, who is this mystic power? Where has it come from? Is it a demigod or a demon? And so in other words, he's just beginning to, I'm sorry, that was the next verse. But anyway, he says, what is this wonderful phenomena? The affection of all of the inhabitants of Raj, including me, towards these boys and calves has increased as never before, just like our affection toward Krishna. So this he has this realization. And then the third phase of the lifting of Yoga Maya is that he realizes this could only be Krishna. Only Krishna's internal potency of Yoga Maya could have this type of incredible power, you know, to so much bring about these deep, loving relationships of all of the residents in Vrindavan with the boys and the calves. That only could be Krishna. So Lord Balaram comes under Krishna, lifts the Yoga Maya from him, and then Balaram then approaches Krishna as far as, explain to me what has actually happened. So we hear, especially in the purport, text 35, Srila Prabhupada talks about these two energies, Mahamaya and Yoga Maya, and how they're working within this world in terms of the spiritual and material energies. So I thought I'd read a little bit and talk a little bit about this Yoga Maya. In Srila Prabhupada, in a purport in 4.16.12 of Srimad Bhagavatam, says, there are two kinds of Maya, Yoga Maya and Mahamaya. Mahamaya is an expansion of Yoga Maya, and both these Mayas are different expressions of the Lord's internal potency. It's stated in the Bhagavad Gita, the Lord appears through his internal potencies, Atma Mayaya. And then in purport to 10.125, in the spiritual world, the Lord's potency works as Yoga Maya, and in the material world, the same potency works as Mahamaya, exactly as electricity works in both a heater and a cooler. This is a real nice analogy that Srila Prabhupada gives. The same electric current goes into the space heater, and it also goes into the air conditioner, to the fan, or to the refrigerator. But same energy is there, but it manifests in two very, very different ways. One is heat and one is cool. So very different manifestations, but it's from the same original energy. So in the same way, the same original energy of Krishna manifests itself in the material world as Mahamaya, as the force of Maya or illusion, the covering of the living entities. And in the spiritual world, it manifests itself as Yoga Maya. And of course, it's described that Mahamaya is actually an expansion of Yoga Maya. Yoga Maya is the original. You may recall that in chapter 1 of the 10th canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam, Srila Prabhupada writes some extensive several pages that he calls end notes, and he explains a lot of different philosophical points very nicely there. And in one of those, he talks a little bit about this division. Prabhupada says, in other words, the entire creation has two divisions, transcendental or spiritual and material. Yoga Maya manages the spiritual world, and by her partial expansion as Mahamaya, she manages the material world. As stated in the Narada Pancharatra, Mahamaya is a partial expansion of Yoga Maya. Bewildering the conditioned souls and liberating the devotees are both functions belonging to Yoga Maya. The Bhagavatam gives sufficient evidence when it clearly says Yoga Mayam Upashrita. So first, of course, we see the expansion of Mahamaya bewildering the living entities in this material world. That we're not going to spend so much time with that expansion. We're talking more about the Yoga Maya, the internal spiritual energy of Krishna. So what are some of the functions of this Yoga Maya? First, Yoga Maya allows the devotees to know Krishna. Yoga Maya actually brings the devotee in touch with Krishna. You know, it brings devotional service for the devotee and helps the devotee to become free from the bewilderment and illusion of Mahamaya and understand the eternal spiritual world. Bhagavatam 2.7.46, in a purport, Srila Prabhupada said, the Lord is unlimited, and by the grace of Yoga Maya, helps the surrendered soul to know him proportionally with advance of one's surrender. So Yogamaya helps us to become Krishna conscious, basically. That internal potency of Krishna, it's described that the devotees are situated within that internal potency, within that spiritual energy. And through that spiritual energy, we know Krishna more and more. Our illusion becomes dissipated, and our spiritual knowledge and bhakti grows more and more by the grace of Krishna and his Yogamaya. So we are, as I said, very much definitely situated within that internal potency if we are acting as devotees of Krishna. This is sometimes, you know, think, well, what's the difference between a devotee and a non-devotee? You could describe it in so many ways. And it's not that we make a lot of artificial distinctions, because we know that only by the grace of the Lord and the grace of Guru am I also not totally covered by illusion of Mahamaya. Okay, that helped. All right, here we go. Thank you. Sound is back. So here's an example of Srila Prabhupada talks about this Yogamaya, the internal potency, of how it gives protection to the devotees. His Devahuti knew that her husband was in a highly elevated transcendental position and was under the shelter of Yogamaya. The Supreme Lord has two energies, material and spiritual. The living entities are marginal energy, Tatashta Shakti. As marginal energy, a person may be under the control of the material energy or the spiritual energy. Sometimes it's said that that's really the limit of our free will. Because, you know, Krishna has complete free will. We have very small, very tiny free will. But as a marginal living entity, that means we can become covered by the internal energy, the spiritual energy, or we can become covered by the external material energy. That's our choice. We become under one or the other. As marginal energy, a person may be under the control of the material energy or the spiritual energy. Kardama Muni was a great soul, and therefore he was under the spiritual energy, which means that he was directly connected to the Supreme Lord. So it is through that internal energy. Of course, sometimes that internal energy is also considered to be a manifestation of Radharani, actually the personification of bhakti. So we become situated under that internal energy, that spiritual energy, and the devotee's position is very safe. It's a very, very wonderful position, very advanced position. And so we have the greatest respect for all devotees who are worshiping the Lord and who are situated in this spiritual energy. It's a qualitative difference. Of course, it's quantitative as well, but primarily it's a qualitative difference between being under the influence of the external energy, Maya, or being controlled by Krishna's internal energy, spiritual energy. And that's one of the things that as we come to Krishna consciousness, we begin to realize. I think that's probably one of the powerful things that many of us experienced when we became devotees, that sort of lifting of the power of Maya, of the material energy, and feeling that shelter of the internal potency of the Supreme Personality of Godhead through his representatives and Srila Prabhupada. That's a very tangible, powerful experience that devotees have. And you see that your life is actually changed forever. So it's described that a devotee is never like an ordinary person. You know, whether we are particularly advanced or not advanced, we still, you know, have that sort of unique quality of being under Krishna's protection through his spiritual energy. Yogamaya also helps us to not only be protected from the material energy, but primarily, and even more importantly, to increase our love for Krishna. So Krishna is always trying to bring the living entities closer to him. We are originally meant to love Krishna, to serve Krishna, and we have forgotten that relationship. But Krishna is working harder than we are. He says we take one step towards Krishna, Krishna will take two steps towards us. So through the spiritual potency, he is continually trying to help us to increase this love. It's from the Bhagavatam. Mother Yashoda, by the grace of the Lord, could understand the real truth. But then again, the Supreme Master, by the influence of the internal potency Yogamaya, inspired her to become absorbed in intense maternal affection for her son. 10.8.4. Purport. Although Mother Yashoda understood the whole philosophy of life, At the next moment, she was overwhelmed by affection for her son, by the influence of Yogamaya. Unless she took care of her son Krishna, she thought, how could he be protected? This forgetfulness is described by Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur as being inspired by the influence of Yogamaya. Materialistic persons are captivated by Mahamaya, whereas devotees, by the arrangement of the spiritual energy, are captivated by Yogamaya. So, in the case of the Damodara Leela, ultimately the power of Yogamaya increased Madhi Shoda's love for Krishna. In this Brahma Vimoha Leela, we see that the power of Yogamaya increased the devotees of Vrindavan's love for Krishna. It increased the love of the cows, it increased the love of the coward men and the coward women. So that through this pastime and the active influence of the spiritual energy simply made them love Krishna more and more. And of course, this is a very, very special thing because although they all had this relationship with Krishna and Vrindavan, for this 1 year, they got to personally have Krishna as their son or as their calf, as the case may be. So this is, again, Krishna's tremendous mercy that he gives his pure devotees, he gives his beloved devotees special opportunity to increase their loving relationship with him. So, of course, these devotees are very, very fortunate, but we are also very, very fortunate because we also have access to the internal potency, to the spiritual energy. It is not, we may not always be so aware of it, but it is always there. And Krishna manifests his internal potency in many, many ways. Krishna is manifesting himself in his deity form. When we are relating to the deity, that is a pure spiritual relationship. That is internal potency. When we are relating to devotees, or to our guru, or to the great acharyas, this is a spiritual relationship. Krishna manifests his internal potency through these wonderful scriptures of Srimad Bhagavatam and Bhagavad Gita, and through bhakti, through service. When we are performing devotional service, we are indeed connected directly with Krishna. There's no doubt about that. That relationship is there. And of course, Krishna appears personally in his many different incarnations to exhibit his internal potency within this world. And one other way that I recently had some experience with is that Krishna also manifests his internal potency through his holy dhams. Those places of pilgrimage are those places where Krishna appeared, and they still have that internal potency, that spiritual energy invested in them. And so you experience when you go to Vrindavan or you go to Govardhan or you go to any Jagannath Puri, you go to any of these wonderful places where Krishna manifested his pastimes, you feel the power of that internal energy. That spiritual energy is still there. And it becomes a little more open to us. Or sometimes, you know, we can experience it a little bit more. Of course, Krishna's eternal potency is right here, within this very room that we are sitting, because this is Krishna's temple, and our lords are right here on the altar before us. But sometimes out of, you know, a certain familiarity or whatever, we may not always be so aware of it. So sometimes when we visit the holy dhams, it gives us a little extra jolt, right? It gives us a little extra feeling of awareness of that internal potency. That's very nice. So I just returned from India, and I was, actually I spent the whole time in Tirupati in South India. Tirupati is right on the southern border of Andhra Pradesh, right next to Tamil Nadu. So the people there speak Telugu and also Tamil to some degree, just kind of interesting, which means no one spoke English very well and their accents are very heavy. So, you know, communication was... But the devotees were just are absolutely wonderful there. In our ISKCON temple there in Tirupati, some of you have been there, I think, but they just built an incredibly beautiful temple. They have most amazing deities, Radha Krishna, Radha Govinda, and the eight Sakis are there. And they're just amazingly beautiful white marble deities. And everything about the temple is very, very first class. The guest house is very nice. If you ever visit there, it's one of the nicer guest houses in India, very new. But most remarkable is the service attitude of the devotees. I mean, of course, we were the GBC, and, you know, it's a big, you know. But still, you could tell. I mean, it was just ingrained within them. And a lot of it comes from they have this very, very wonderful temple president, Revati Raman. Revati Raman is actually head of the International Devotee Care Community, Devotee Care Committee. So that's his mood. You know, it's just really this mood of service and care for the devotees. And so we all felt just incredibly welcome and had this wonderful experience. Now, the city of Tirupati, it's a small city, and it's kind of in a valley. And the temple's on the edge of the valley, and the, kind of like you look out the window, and there's this incredible mountain, the Tirumala Mountains or Tirumala Hills. And so the very famous place of pilgrimage is actually called Tirumala, and that's on top of the hill. So it's about 7 miles from Tirupati, and it's like 2,000 feet up. So there's this wonderful, incredible mountain, and it has all these, you know, rock outcroppings, and there's 7 of them, actually. Those are the 7 hoods of Anantashesha. So the hill is actually Anantashesha. And this is all very bona fide, too. I mean, Lord Chaitanya visited Tirupati. It's described in the Chaitanya Charitamrita. It was a holy place of pilgrimage that Lord Chaitanya himself went there. Malati was telling me that she went there with Srila Prabhupada many, many years ago in the early 70s. You know, she says she didn't remember too much of it because it was very much more rustic in those days than it is now, and she had a small baby, and, you know, so she said, can't remember if it had too much impression on her, but Srila Prabhupada very much wanted to visit there. So it's a very, very nice place. The actual temple is a temple of Venkateshvara, also known as Balaji. It's an interesting mood because it's, of course, Vishnu. It's, the Narayan worship, the mood of awe and reverence. But at the same time, they all chant Govinda and Gopal, and they call them Balaji. So there's kind of an interesting sort of mix there. I don't quite understand it, but they're very attracted to Krishna and Govinda also, although the mood is obviously the Narayan worship. And it's incredibly opulent. I mean, there's just constant artiks going on, and it's this very, very reverential mood. Now, what makes it somewhat of a unique experience is that this is the most popular temple in all of India. They get 50,000 visitors per day. 50,000. And so a lot of what they do there is crowd control. You know, but it's extremely well organized. The temple is actually run by the government, and believe it or not, they do a very good job. In fact, Srila Prabhupada even many years ago pointed out we could study their management methods. You're almost not in India. Anyway, it's like when you're there's like a 10-mile drive up the hill, and you can imagine, I mean, I'm thinking this is going to be some treacherous thing, you know, with buses coming, you're going to fall off the hill or something. It's not like that at all. It's like going to a theme park in America. I mean, this is fairly recent, but it's beautiful roads. It's like 2 lanes. It's like there's no intersections. It's just straight. You just drive straight up. And it's very, very nicely kept up. The grounds are immaculate. I heard they have something like 17,000 employees. I mean, this is a major operation. It really is. I mean, not only do you get 50,000 visitors, but we were told that the Hyundai box generates $200,000 per day. So we have to figure out their system. Well, their system's actually fairly clear. Venkateshvara has got a reputation, somehow or another, as being one who bestows material boons. So everyone is convinced they go there and they give some donation that they will get that back. So now, I mean, of course, many people are devotees and devotional, but also they get many, many wealthy businessmen who invest in Balaji. Some people even do this. They say they'll actually form a corporation and they'll give like a 10% ownership to Balaji of their whole company. In other words, so they'll give 10% of all their profits. Of course, they're assuming they're going to get 100 times back or whatever. But so that's there to some degree. But also, Venkateshvara means one who takes away sins. So he's also considered a very merciful deity and one who will take away the sins of all the visitors that come. If you see pictures of Venkateshvara, you see these sort of 2 plates are covering his eyes. They're almost always there, but one day a week they take them off. It wasn't the day we were there. But because Venkateshvara is so merciful, he doesn't want to see the sins of the people that come. That's what they say. So that's why his eyes are actually covered. It's also interesting in South India. Of course, this is a Ramanuja Sampradaya. And Vishnu is often alone. They usually have a separate temple for Lakshmi. So it's a very small temple. You know, it's like 1,000 years old, you know, those old 1,000-year-old sandstone, very intricate, nice. But the darshan room is like you go down a little narrow corridor, you get a seat for 2 minutes, and then you kind of walk back. So you can imagine trying to get 50,000 people through that. It's not like you come into a big temple room that holds thousands of people. So most people just, you know, it's just this, and people wait hours and hours and hours in line. Now, I'm going to pass it around. Now, fortunately, Revati Ram has worked for years. He's a resident. He's many generations a resident of Tirupati, his family. But he's worked for years cultivating relationships. And we have a wonderful relationship between the ISKCON temple and the temple there. And, you know, like all the managers act like he's their best friend and everything. So he arranged a special darshan, a private darshan. So we went up with like about 32 of us or something, GBC members. So we didn't have to stand any lines. Well, we had to wait a little while in this one waiting room, which was like an airport waiting room. It was really nice, you know. And we got pretty much right in. You know, we waited a little while, but we got this real special treatment. I think he probably paid them something considerable also. I think that's also involved. Actually, you can get a 300-rupee line or a 500-rupee line. No, really, you... Yeah, I mean, if you're a poor person, you wait about 8 hours, you know, but if you, you know, it's a little less, you can pay money and get in a shorter line, but we got the VIP treatment. It was actually very incredible, and of course, we got every kind of charanamrita, and, you know, they stick smelly rags in your face and all kinds of things, you know, well, no, you know, it's like perfumes from the deities and all that. Then we went to this one special room, his storehouse, we had all the stuff, and they gave us all these grains of rice, and the story is that every grain you put in your cash box and every grain turns into, I don't know if it's $1 million or 1 million rupees. Either way, I'll take it. But anyway, I got that carefully put somewhere. It's funny, you know, Gopal Bhattapur, you may know, he's a very successful businessman, is with us, and he kept demanding more and more. He got a big handful of the rice, which he'll use for Krishna service. But anyway, it was it's quite astounding. Now, I mean, the whole, it's a huge compound. There's many other little temples all over, too, a Varaha temple, this one, that one. But a lot of it is just lines and lines of people, and all this crowd control takes up a big amount of what they're doing. But it's fairly amazing. It's very, and it's a very wonderful place. I mean, it's the spiritual atmosphere is very evident. The worship is very, very nice. You know, Hanuman was born there. I mean, you know, it's a really far-out place. And there were all these different pastimes with Lord Brahma. And I can't remember all of them, but there were so many different pastimes occurred there. And another thing that's interesting is that originally pilgrims would come, and they would, rather than going up the road, there's this big stairway. There's steps that go all the way up the hill. And many people go up all the steps. It takes, I think, 3 or 4 hours. It's like a couple thousand steps, you know. It's like a huge thing. It's one of the austerities that people often do. And some of our ISKCON devotees have done that. They said in the past they went up, and it's quite a challenge, apparently. But now the hill itself is heavily forested. This is South India. It's not exactly jungle-like, but it's pretty intense. And, you know, it's very lush and is filled with forest. And it used to be there were tigers and elephants wild on the hill, but the tigers are gone now, but they're leopards apparently still. And Revati was telling us that a couple times the leopards have come down and attacked their goshal, the cows. They've had to drive them off and protect the cows. But there are leopards there now, but there used to be tigers till about 30 years ago. He told us one very interesting story in that regard. His mother was 5 years old. So that's probably about 70 years ago. I mean, you know, because figuring how old Revati is and his mother. When his mother was five, many, many years ago, the family would regularly, a couple times a year, you know, go up the hill to see Balaji. And on one of those occasions, they're going up the hill, up the stairs, and this little stray dog is following them. So this, you know, nobody owns dogs there, but, you know, stray dog was following them along. And the little girl, Revati's mother, who's five, had to answer the call of nature. So she goes off the path into this very thick, heavy, you know, bushes, jungle off. And the dog follows along with her, goes with her. Then, immediately, a huge tiger comes out of the jungle and right at her. But he looked around and he decided, I guess, the dog would taste better. So he grabbed the dog, just took the dog off and ran off. And, of course, her family was absolutely convinced that Balaji had sent the little dog to save the daughter. You know, and I have no doubt that's true because she later gave birth to this just incredibly wonderful devotee, Revati Rama. And so I'm sure that Venkateshwara had some plan, you know, to save her in that way. But, you know, everyone has these amazing, wonderful stories involving the great mercy of Venkateshwara, of Balaji. So anyway, it's a very, very nice experience. And I've never even been to South India, what to speak of Tirupati. So I really enjoyed it, liked it very much. I was also in meetings for about 14 days straight. That was a little, not quite as nectarine, as they say, but very valuable. I think we got a lot done, making progress. That's topic for another day, or istogosti or something. But anyway, very, very nice experience. And again, going back to our theme, Krishna really does manifest himself in these places of pilgrimage, and you feel that spiritual energy. It's very, very apparent. Now, it's a different mood, I admit. And one thing, although I was so much enjoying it and appreciating it, and like, you know, I really like everything, they run it really nicely, and, you know, they take such wonderful care of opulence of the deity. But I also was appreciating that Srila Prabhupada gave us this wonderful Radha Krishna mood, this Radha Krishna Vrindavan devotion. So I think in one sense, you know, we're very, very fortunate that even as here we are in the Western world and low-born and everything else, but Srila Prabhupada and Lord Chaitanya came and gave us the absolute highest realization, gave us the most intimate original form of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna, and his eternal consort and all of the residents of Vrindavan, and we're able to read these wonderful pastimes from the Srimad Bhagavatam. So on one hand, I was very much appreciating everything there. It's another manifestation of Krishna, it's Lord Narayan, but it also makes us appreciate when we came back down from the hill and appreciate Radha Govinda and in our Tirupati temple as well. Okay, I think I'll finish. Oh, by the way, they gave us all kinds of things. We got, you know, like the gift pack, you know, of all the Vrishadam. One thing they're famous for, you probably heard about their laddus. They distribute these little small laddus. You know. So these sort of softball size laddus are quite famous there. And some people, one of my daughters said that I should tell people, you know, I don't know, I hate to make any criticism, but sometimes there's this kind of flavor of things sometimes from India that people don't like so much. And so they said, remind that this is really good. This is the wonderful laddu. It's very tasty. We used to get this regularly. If anybody wants to come up and get some, I'll write it up here or something. Anyway, this is the end of my beautiful ball. We're going to cut it up and distribute it. So any questions or comments? We did have a verse earlier in some philosophy. Yeah. Yeah, Prabhu. Oh, you must have been really going for 2 hours. That's pretty good. I hear that's a good time.
but actually, you know, we went to Tirupati a couple of times, mm-hmm. and we climbed up the hill with a lot of devotees.
You went up?
You know, I took like, at one point we went like 75 people up the hill.
Uh-huh.
And I recommend to anybody that goes to India, to definitely go to see Lord Balaji and experience what you say about the devotees of Tirupati. Because, you know, we travel all over India in safari, but we always remember that the service attitude of the devotees from Tirupati is second to none.
Isn't it unique?
It's second to none.
Well, I'm glad that you experienced that, because sometimes you think, well, you're there at a big GBC meeting, or they're just putting thing. But that confirms, it's like
yes,
that.
Yes, it's like, you know, it doesn't matter. Like, you know, even if you are, whoever you are, they treat you like if you are a guru. You know, you feel embarrassed sometimes, you know.
Just, I know.
Oh, please.
I was totally embarrassed, you know, by how just, you know, how nice the service was, and it was very reverential. And you know, of course, and especially, you know, they really appreciate Prabhupada disciples. So, I mean, if anyone gets an opportunity, it's really well worth going. Thank you.
And also that temple was built only with Srila Prabhupada's book distribution.
Oh, I had it in my notes. I forgot that. Thank you for reminding me. They are very, very strong in book distribution in Tirupati. And in fact, they have these stalls. They worked out arrangements, you know, because all these people are there. By the way, they have like hundreds and hundreds of guest houses up on Tirumala, you know, for all the visitors that come. And then they have like, you know, kind of like shopping areas and things. Anyway, ISKCON has several book tables that they've allowed them to put up there. They also distribute laddu. They distribute 20,000 pieces of laddu a day. I think it's 20,000. And they read their scores every morning. They're very into book distribution. They read their scores in front of the deity. And they distribute, you know, several hundred books, like a couple hundred big books and lots of small books every single day out of those book stalls with all the visitors. And they got them to agree that they would only distribute Srila Prabhupada's books, only the ISKCON books. They don't distribute any of the Ramanuja books there. They let them do that. So, and that's really brought in a lot of financial support for the temple and allowed them to create this wonderful place. Thank you for reminding me of that. Madan Mohan Prabhu?
Just two things I remember when I visited there. One of the points that I thought was quite extraordinary is at 5 o'clock in the morning, the PA system broadcasts Mangal Arti throughout the whole city.
Oh, really?
Every place.
Throughout the city?
That's on the top of the hill there.
Oh.
So everybody gets to hear whatever, because they play it loud.
they like to play things
big,
loud.
big megaphone kind of outside speakers. Yeah. And the other thing, Prabhupada said that when he was talking about New Vrindavan, that he should model New Vrindavan after that community, because it was so nicely done as a place of pilgrimage.
Yeah, and it actually is. Like, of course, the city of Tirumala down in the valley, I mean, it's very devotional. Everything's centered around the deities there. It is, and it's very, very nicely organized. Very clean city, you know, you don't see so much. People actually sweep up garbage. And up there they had trash cans. You ever seen, like, trash cans in India where people put their garbage? Really, really nicely managed.
I heard that a big financial support for the temple is donations of hair.
Oh, at the Balaji temple. It's a tradition that people go and they shave their heads, men, women, children, everybody. A lot of times they'll shave their heads, and of course they use that hair, you know, they sell it for making wigs. We heard they make $6 million a year off the hair from the pilgrims that come. Another thing we might think, we're smoke you, can we think? Anyway, I don't know if we've got that catch on here or not. Yeah, yes.
Donate so much at that temple is that when Lord Balaji was on the planet, he wanted to get married to Padmavati, and he could not pay enough dowry. So he said, my devotees who will come here, they will pay you the rest of the Lakshmi.
Oh, okay.
And so they are paying with the interest. And Mother Padmavati or Queen Padmavati is none other than the Maya Sita that Lord Ram exchanged from the Agni.
Uh-huh.
So she incarnated as Padmavati.
Yeah, there's a lot of different pastimes, like, you know, that are there. Well, we should probably